Issues Etc. is listener supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support. Welcome back to the last half hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Concluding a five-part weekly series with Scott Klusendorf of Life Training Institute. Bad ways to argue about abortion today, disguising your true position. You hide your true position behind the so-called hard cases. Now, lawyers will tell you that hard cases and exceptions make for bad law. But what about arguments when it comes to the issue of life? Scott Klusendorf is our guest. He's president of Life Training Institute, author of the forthcoming book, The Case for Life. Scott, welcome back.
Good to be back, Todd.
Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE, and our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Scott, you do a lot of debate on the issue of life, and I'm sure that you have heard the hard case argument many times. What's the most common hard case presented to you as an argument in favor of abortion?
Well, undoubtedly, the one with the most emotional appeal is the appeal to rape. And it goes something like this. Okay, it actually can take two forms. The civil form goes like this. All right, I'm with you. I understand the pro-life view, but I still have trouble thinking about a woman who's been raped, having to go through and give birth to this child, and that child serving as a memory to her forever of what she went through. Then there is what I call the crusader. The crusader is not interested in a reasonable discussion of the question. He or she just wants to make the pro-lifer look bad. And the crusader will say something like, well, so you pro-lifers want to just force a woman who's been raped to suffer interminably for the rest of her life over this assault that she suffered. How can you consider yourself compassionate, given that's your view? Of those two, I have found it very profitable to interact with those who are genuinely trying to work through the issue, but it's much more difficult when you're dealing with someone who simply does not want to discuss the issue. They simply want to make you look bad.
Okay, what's the essential problem with the hard case argument?
The essential problem is it assumes the unborn are not human, like every other objection, or almost every other objection that we've discussed in the last few weeks does. Here's what I do when I get hit with a rape question to expose that assumption that the unborn aren't human. They'll say to me, this woman's been raped. She's going to remember this for the rest of her life. Why should she have to carry this child that will serve as a reminder? And I'll simply say very graciously, you know, you're right. This child may serve as a reminder to her. I don't dispute you on that. And that's an important thing to say, Todd, because some pro-lifers pretend that if the woman just has the child, everything will be fine, and they flippantly gloss over this woman's suffering. That's a mistake. Let's go ahead and acknowledge it. And then I simply ask a very direct question, and I do it graciously. I'll say, tell me, how do you think a civil society should treat innocent human beings that remind us of a painful event? I let the question sink in for a moment, and then I say, is it okay to kill them so we can feel better? Now, I think you can see, as an experienced pro-lifer, where that question gets us back to. We're right back to the issue of what is the unborn. The person will, if they're honest and they're actually looking for a resolution to this, will think about it for a moment and say, well, what do you mean? I guess I don't know what you're following. And I'll just simply say, well, is it okay to kill innocent human beings that remind us of something painful? They'll say, well, no. And then I'll say, well, why not? Well, because they're human beings. Ah, if the unborn are human, like other human beings who shouldn't be killed unjustly, shouldn't we give the unborn the protection of law even if they cause us painful memories? Now we're discussing the real issue here, and the real issue is what is the unborn It's not rape. It's not hard cases. That's the issue we need to deal with first. None of these people would say you can kill a toddler if it helps relieve the mother of her bad memories.
Well, you talked about this last time, the trotting out the toddler tactic, where you substitute, in essence, the toddler for the unborn to demonstrate that the person has assumed the unborn is not a human being, but they would assume that the toddler is. And I'm just wondering, this seems, the whole rape and incest thing seems tailor-made for that, because there are all sorts of toddlers, young people, college-age students, and adults walking around who are, in fact, at least by the circumstances of their conception, the products of rape. And it seems to me that if you could kill the human being in the womb because they're the product of rape, the statutes of limitations shouldn't apply here. You should be able to kill them at any stage of development or age if they remind you of a painful crime and an incident.
Well, that's exactly right. Why not kill the 2-year-old that reminds us of something painful? Now, of course, this flies in the face of people's intuitions. They know better. And they say, well, of course you can't kill that 2-year-old. And then by simply coming back to them and saying, well, tell me why we can't. Well, because he's human. Well, now we're back to the crux of the issue. And that's the issue we always need to start with, Todd, the issue of what is the unborn. When we allow ourselves to be taken down rabbit trails like back alley abortions, rape and incest, mother can't afford another child, we end up losing the argument because we're not dealing with the crux of the issue, which is what is the unborn. Nobody is going to say you can kill a 2-year-old if it will help the family balance its checkbook at the end of the month. Nobody is going to say to us, sure, go ahead and kill that toddler if it will help the mother have better memories of her past. It's only by assuming the unborn aren't human that these arguments have any force whatsoever, because we know deep down that hardship doesn't justify homicide. If killing you makes me feel better, that doesn't mean I can do it. Now, it is important, though, Todd, to say to people that although you believe your answer is correct, it still is easier for us to sympathize with a mother we can see than the child we can't. Now, that's just a human emotion. The point we're making, though, is that human emotions should not rule the day when there are superior facts and arguments in play. Our initial feelings about someone can be very misguided. A century ago, people thought it absolutely ridiculous that anyone would consider a black human being on the same par as a white one. Well, today, we don't think that way, thankfully, but that is what the prevailing emotional feel was a century, century and a half ago. Well, facts and arguments played a role in helping to reverse that, thankfully, and they must play a role here as well.
Are pro-choicers really arguing, in the case of, say, rape or incest, that abortion should be legal only in those hard cases?
No, not at all. In fact, most of them, and this is where we get to the crusader, up till this point we've been talking about what I would just call the questioner, someone who wants to genuinely resolve what for them seems to be a problem. But the crusader is simply trying to make you look bad, and he is going to disguise his true position by hiding behind the hard case of rape. And so when he throws up the rape objection, he is trying to fool you into believing that he is this moderate, very reasonable, almost neutral observer who simply can't understand why you're being so extremist in your view. And it's important with these people to call them out, to expose their smokescreen. So let's say I give a talk on abortion, a guy raises his hand and says, well, what about a woman who's been raped? Why do you want to force her to carry this child to term, be a reminder forever to her? And let's say I walk him through the sequence we just went through by asking him, well, how do you think we should treat innocent human beings that remind us of a painful event? And let's assume he doesn't take the bait, he doesn't want to engage. At that point, I'll simply look at him and say, okay, I'll tell you what, for the sake of argument, let's go ahead and concede that abortion should be allowed in cases of rape. That's not my logical or philosophical position, but let's grant it for the sake of this discussion. Would you then join me in working to end and restrict all other abortions, most of which, the overwhelming majority of which, are done for socioeconomic reasons, yes or no? I'm telling you, Todd, without exception, the answer is no, I won't take that deal. And then I simply say to them, oh, so you really aren't so much interested in the rape issue as you are trying to hide your true position, which is that a woman has a fundamental right to an abortion for any reason she wants through all 9 months of pregnancy. Now, look, if they want to argue for that, let them do it. But let's be honest about it. Let's not hide behind the rape victim as a means of really arguing for a different position altogether. I like what Frank Beckwith says. He says, look, arguing that we ought to allow all abortions because of a rare case of rape is kind of like arguing that we ought to do away with all traffic laws because you might have to run a red light rushing a loved one to the hospital.
Well, it's a great analogy. Do you think, we've only got about 30 seconds here before break, do you think that many people who proffer the hard case arguments have thought it through sufficiently to realize that they are, in fact, arguing for abortion under all circumstances, only using the hard case to try and squeeze it in or shoehorn it in? In other words, are they fooling themselves, thinking, you know, I really am pretty moderate on this position, and never really ask themselves the question, would I restrict abortions outside the circumstances of rape and incest?
The crusaders, the ones that are simply trying to make the pro-lifer look bad, they have thought it through in the sense that they're very deceitfully trying to disguise what they're really up to. But there are people who bring up the rape issue who aren't deliberately trying to be deceptive. They're genuinely conflicted. Now, their moral conflict will be resolved once we bring them back to the question, what is the unborn? And by asking that question, how should we treat innocent human beings that remind us of a painful event, we bring them back to that question. And at that point, their moral ambiguity begins to be resolved. But the crusader, as I said, he's got a different agenda.
When we come back from this break, more with Scott Klusendorf. We're concluding our series on bad ways to argue about abortion today, disguising your true position by appealing to hard cases. We'll take your phone calls and your email on the other side, 1-877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org.
Pro-life leader Dr. Lawrence White on why you should support Issues Etc.
In a culture that has forgotten about the truth of God, God's people need to stand upon His Word firmly and faithfully. Issues Etc. raises the questions that are in discussion in our society and in our church today in a way that highlights the truth of God amid all the error and the falsehood of men. This is a program that is making a difference in our society, in our church, in our culture, to the glory of the Lord Jesus Christ.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a tax-deductible gift today. Donate online at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Defending life from beginning to end. Issues Etc. Thanks for your support.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An abortion bailout.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
In these economically perilous times, when entire industries are on the brink of collapse and the government is desperately seeking to avoid financial disaster by going deeper and deeper into debt, pro-abortion groups are demanding that the government dedicate more taxpayer money for abortions. Several dozen pro-abortion organizations led by Planned Parenthood presented the Obama administration with a 50-page proposal requesting that the Hyde Amendment be repealed so that in 2009 the government can dedicate $1.5 billion to fund abortions, both in America and around the world.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.
You can't help me but murder and cover it. Everywhere you look now, murder and cover it.
We're talking about Bad Ways to Argue About Abortion, concluding our series with Scott Klusendorf, president of Life Training Institute and author of the forthcoming book, The Case for Life. Our in-studio email address is talkback@issuesetc.org and our call-in number 1-877-623-6943, coming to you live this Wednesday, February the 4th. This email comes from Nathan in Minnesota. The first email is about prevention. The other email is about punishment. Nathan in Minnesota says, if you were privy to, knew for certain that various persons were coming together at a specific location to murder a child, and if the courts or the police either did not listen or believe your pleas, would it not be right to take things into your own hands, to do everything in your power to protect the innocent life from the aggressor? I know that I would feel what I should do, and not to do so would be negligent. But as soon as abortion clinics are shown to be relevant to the above, we, nervous about persons who bomb clinics or assassinate abortion doctors, get cold feet, don't we? Yes, the important question is, who is the unborn? But is he right that we really don't believe a fetus is a human being? Your thoughts there on Nathan's observation.
Well, first of all, even if it were the case that pro-lifers were not applying their position consistently, meaning, let's say it were the case that we are claiming the unborn are human, but we're unwilling to do what it takes to save them, it wouldn't follow that we were wrong about the unborn. It wouldn't even necessarily follow that our belief wasn't genuine. It could just be we were chickens or we were fearful. The second point is, it doesn't logically follow that because there is violence against the unborn, pro-lifers should use violence to stop the violence against the unborn. What logically follows is you will work to stop the wholesale killing in a way that is going to be most effective. And picking up a gun and shooting abortion doctors is not going to do that, and I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to see that. What we do say as pro-lifers is that we have a duty to stop the killing. And there are examples of this that we could give. I'll give you some. Do I believe that what is going on right now over in the Middle East, in the Gaza Strip, and with the Israelis defending themselves against terrorist groups, do I believe that innocent Israelis are being killed? Absolutely. Does it follow I'm required to go pick up a gun and fly over there and start shooting Palestinians? I think everybody would say, well, that would be completely nuts. And even in a military scenario, the idea that you automatically have to use lethal force is simply false. You're only justified using lethal force to the extent that that is your only option, and you're only justified using force to the level that is necessary to deal with the problem. I'll give you an example of this. In World War II, the United States and Great Britain, Canada, and other allies dropped paratroopers behind enemy lines. Every one of these Allied troops believed the Nazis were evil. They thought they were evil for killing Jews. They thought they were evil for the way they treated Poles and other ethnic groups. But when they landed behind enemy lines, they did not immediately start shooting German soldiers. Rather, they tried to fit in. They acted like German soldiers. They talked German. They smoked German cigarettes. They were there on a bigger mission to get intelligence, to lay the groundwork for the invasion, the D-Day invasion that would be coming a few short weeks later. For those guys to immediately begin shooting to kill Nazis would have been an egregious wrong at a prudential level. And by the way, the prudential now slips into the moral, because if they had done that, it would have put the larger rescue operation in jeopardy. And when pro-lifers take matters into their own hands, when we still have political options open to us, we are putting that larger operation in jeopardy, and I don't see how you can justify it.
Carrie in Minnesota says, there are consequences to crimes committed against victims in our society. There are people that might lose life or limb or have a lifetime consequence. Say they got shot in the head during a robbery. The person deals with the crime committed against them all their life, every time they look in the mirror. So when a woman gets pregnant due to rape, at least the pregnancy ends after 9 months, and then the baby can be given away for adoption, and they don't need to live with killing their baby. They also may find that a blessing comes from the crime if they think they want to keep the baby. At least the baby would be a blessing to the couple that gets to adopt. So there are victims of all crimes. Other people live with lifetime consequences. Your thoughts on Carrie's observation?
Well, I think she's making a valid point in this sense, that there are women who give birth to children under extreme circumstances and still find those children to be blessings. Is that true in every case? No, because how women feel about their children is a subjective thing. How we ought to treat those children, regardless of the circumstances of their conception, is objective, meaning there's right and wrong regardless of how we feel, and it is simply not right to kill one human being so another can feel better. One thing I would add here is that I think it's really important for us as pro-lifers to go ahead and stress the blessing that children can be to a family. We should in no way not do that. But we also need to be prepared to argue the other side of it, and that is that even if a family does not feel prepared to welcome this child, there are strong moral reasons for doing so anyway. And though we would never say a family must agree to raise the child, we would say that that child should not be killed by the family for reasons that are simply not justified.
Eric in Laurel, Maryland has this email. I was wondering if during the segment you could discuss how those who get an abortion, those who perform the abortion, and everyone else who have directly participated in the abortion should be punished should it ever be made illegal again. It seems naive to think that abortion should be illegal and would never occur again. It seems that by any definition, someone would be guilty of first-degree murder. The minimum punishment for this kind of crime in many places is something like 25 years in prison and can extend to life in prison or even the death penalty. Does the woman who decides to hire someone to murder her child receive one of these common punishments for the crime? Does the doctor who is hired to murder the child receive one of these punishments? What about the nurses, parents who drove the child to the clinic or perhaps even paid for the murder, the father who does nothing to prevent it? In our legal system, says Eric, I believe all such people should be equally guilty of the murder and should it be involved any average adult. Your thoughts on punishments for abortion, should it be illegal?
Sure. Well, my first observation is, what's wrong with a law that says you can't kill innocent human beings, and if you do, there's going to be consequences? So, yes, there should be consequences. Now, what should those consequences be? I can answer with three words, or two words. That depends. It depends on a number of things. It's very hard to discuss actual consequences until we know the specifics of an individual case. And that's true of any crime, Todd, not just abortion. Motive and intent are undoubtedly going to play a factor, as well the relationship of those involved. So it's premature to say what the actual penalty should be in a specific abortion case without knowing fully what the specifics are surrounding those circumstances. We're certainly careful to investigate other crimes, and we would certainly want to do the same with abortion. But generally speaking, yes, there should be legal consequences. And what's wrong with saying there should be? We certainly punish other crimes that way.
With 1 minute, and finally, to conclude all of our series with you, why, as you have said so many times, must we always keep the focus of this debate on the question, what is the unborn?
Because if we don't, Todd, we will end up talking about the issues that aren't the main thing. You know, there's the old cliche, keep the main thing the main thing. Well, in the abortion debate, the main thing is the status of the unborn. Can we kill the unborn? My answer is yes, we can, if. If what? If the unborn are not human beings. And for those of your listeners that pick up my book that'll be coming out soon, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. By the way, sorry for the shameless plug here. They will notice that I devote an entire chapter to keeping that main question at the forefront of the debate. There's also a chapter in the book that deals with those who concede the unborn are human but argue for abortion anyway. But for the vast majority of people we're going to meet, they simply assume the unborn aren't human, and that's where the difficulties come in.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. Scott, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for all the time you've devoted to our program, and especially during this series.
I'm glad to do it. You're doing a terrific job with Issues, etc., and it's always an honor to be on your show, Todd.
Folks, you can read an article that Scott has written titled Five Bad Ways to Argue About Abortion. It's at our homepage under the on-demand section, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Tomorrow on the program, we'll discuss repentance with Dr. Rod Rosenblatt. That really is the question. I mean, it's simple. It's really whether you talk about it biologically. What is the unborn human being? Legally, what is the unborn? Well, a fellow citizen deserving of equal protection under the law. Morally, what is the unborn? Your neighbor. All three of those things are true, and no matter how you come at the question, and no matter how the debate proceeds, it should never stray far or ever leave behind that main point, because after all, what we're really talking about here is the neighbor, the fellow citizen, the human being that is the unborn. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening. Talk with you again tomorrow on Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.